This is Moments with Foo with James Foo Torres, better known as Foo, the show that takes you around the world to share interviews with some of the most successful and relevant people on the planet, hear their stories, and get the most important business lessons they have learned on their road to success, and get exclusive advice on how to implement their success into your life and business. Moments with Foo is brought to you by the Strategic Advisor Board and your host, Foo.
Hello and welcome to Moments with Foo. I'm your host, James Foo Torres, but you can call me Foo. It's the name of the show. Today I have Kevin Mitchell. He is an expert on hedge accounting, but I'm going to let him tell you more about that. But first, Kevin, how are you?
Hey, James. Thanks for having me on. Very well, thank you. I'm based in Sydney, Australia, so it's bright and early this morning. So we're about 11 hours ahead, I think, of you guys. But yeah, very well, sort of mid-month at this stage, so a little bit quieter work-wise, so got a bit of time to do some of this marketing and brand awareness with you.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I mean, being on a podcast is a great brand awareness and marketing thing, like you said. It's a great way to show people your personality. And the way that I designed this podcast is to give actionable tips or advice for people so that way they can get some value from you up front before they decide if they want to know you better and possibly hire you. So let's kick it off with a quick introduction about yourself and your company.
Okay, well, I'm founder of Hedge Effective Advisory. And yeah, I'm a chartered accountant. And the business provides managed services and ongoing advice in relation to hedge accounting to CFOs. Generally, CFOs of mid-sized businesses. So typically anyone turning over more than $100 million a year, anywhere up to maybe $1 billion. So that kind of middle range I would classify as our sweet spot, where we do work with smaller companies. We do work with larger companies than that as well. But the offering tends to be best suited to the mid market. In terms of hedge accounting, it's a very complex and niche area of accounting. So I'll give you a little bit of a introduction about what that is. So it's got nothing. A lot of people, you know, immediately jump to, is it related to hedge funds? But it's not. I mean, hedging. If we look at hedging first, as opposed to the accounting of it. Hedging is a risk management activity, and you're talking normally about financial market risk. That's what a lot of companies will be hedging. And there's three types of risks that you classify, and it's foreign exchange risk, interest rate risks, and commodity price risks. So the corporates, or could be, doesn't have to be corporates, could be not-for-profits, could be private equity firms, could be, variety different structure of a business or entity that's hedging, but they're doing risk management activities generally to protect either their margins, gross margins, or some form of financial metric. So it could be interest rate cover, financial covenants, or it could just be their competitiveness in their market for whatever they're selling. So they'll be looking to lock in forward rates of either cost of goods bought or sold, or they're trying to lock in future interest rate costs or commodity prices. So what happens is they go to an executing party, so normally a bank, investment bank, a broker, and those guys are the market makers. So they'll go in, they'll sell, they're on the sell side, they'll be selling over the counter derivative contracts to these businesses. And the CFO will do a contract with those banks to lock in a future rate. That's called hedging. It's a risk management activity, and a lot of businesses do it. The ones that are really they've got a high sensitivity to movements in those markets. So, you know, if foreign exchange rates move, or if interest rates move by a little amount, then those CFOs know that, you know, they can't afford for that to happen. So they're going to use contracts to control that risk. So they're the ones that we work with a lot, the ones that are always in the market and doing these deals. When it comes to the accounting thereof of those contracts, so a financial derivative is by default measured at fair value through the profit and loss account. A lot of the CFOs listening here will know that derivatives are measured at fair value. So, you know, that mark-to-market movement on those outstanding positions is just going to go straight into your P&L and your income statement. CFOs don't like that because it's going to create volatility in those financial reports. And, you know, when those reports get published to stakeholders, either on a monthly basis or 6 monthly, if you're not doing hedge accounting, then you're going to have all this volatility going through the income statement and P&L. That's going to distort your true financial performance of the business. And, you know, it's not a very good look for the business. So best practice is to apply hedge accounting to those contracts. So CFOs will engage my business, especially the ones, like I said, mid-market. They don't have a large internal team with the capability to run an effective hedge accounting program. So they won't be able to just say to someone in the team, can you arrange the hedge accounting for these contracts? Because it's so complex and niche. A general accountant just wouldn't know what to do and where to start. And they won't have the systems or infrastructure to do it properly. So it makes sense to outsource that kind of stuff to an expert. And what we do then is we achieve hedge accounting for them, which generates a very preferential accounting treatment for those contracts. So effectively, the movements that would be going through the P&L and income statement, my team are able to really move those gains and losses out and park them in the balance sheet and then offset them when the time comes. So it creates a much smoother profile of your performance. So in a nutshell, that's what we do as a business. We ensure that they get the treatment up front. We do the advice, but also ongoing, we're doing all the valuations, the journals, the documentation to make sure that the hedge accounting program is compliant with the accounting standards, etc. So very, very complex, James. And you know, it's hard to really summarize it in layman's terms. But I think, you know, very quickly, you just say it's about smoothing that profile of your earnings and your income statement and not having it going up and down and really unpredictable and unreliable. We provide that predictability and peace of mind that it's going to be correct. They're going to be accurate and they're not going to be distorted by your outstanding positions.
Yeah, that's, I mean, definitely something very, very specific. And me, that I am already in the tax industry as a marketer, right? But I still learn a lot about the tax and accounting industry in general. And I didn't know about hedge accounting until I met you. And I think I heard certain things, but nobody that knew so much like you. So it makes sense that you are able to provide a great service because you're so deep into this topic. And so you're able to provide the best possible service on that specific thing, because clearly, like me, that I talked to so many accountants, having even heard about it, maybe some characteristics or something, means that there's definitely not many people out there that are good at this and let alone specialize on this. So definitely seems like you have you are providing something that is a need, especially, you know, maybe I'm not talking to enough 100 million companies. So maybe that's a thing, right?
No, you're 100% right. I mean, even at other accounting firms, you know, chartered accounting firms outside the big four. So even in second tier, third tier firms, they don't really have experts on this standard in-house. So I do partnerships with some of those firms as well, like the actual accounting firms, because it is so complex and niche. And, you know, I've been, you know, day in, day out on these standards for for the last 15 years, you know, to really consider myself an expert now. Whereas, you know, you might be a financial reporting expert at an audit firm, but if you just look at these standards once a year, you're never going to have the, you know, the deep domain knowledge that someone like me, I've got. So yeah, it's so complex. Like, it's just very ripe for consulting and for outsourcing, because it's you just don't have enough. If you don't see it enough, you're never going to have that experience.
I can tell, because I was, you know, this is the second time that I hear you talk about this in detail, and I get it from a 30,000 foot view. But when it comes to the understanding the nuts and bolts, and not even getting super deep, but just even like the tech, some of the technical things that are hard to grasp.
Like,
but
if you look here, like some of the books I've got here, there's thousands and thousands of like pages here to do with these things. And I'm still like, you know, there'll still be new clients that come up, and there'll be slightly different structures, slightly different requirements. And I've got to go back to the basics, go back to the actual standards time and time again, because, you know, there's still new things that pop up. It's just, so, and a lot of it is interpretation as well. How do you interpret some of the standards to your situation? So yeah, forever learning on this stuff as well. And it's just, it's just a very
accounting. Accounting in general is an ever-learning thing. There's always new things, right? There's the BOI, right? The beneficial owner inform or something like that. I don't know. That information, so beneficial ownership information. and those are, this just started recently. I know that you're in Australia, but I'm guessing because you talk about the Big Four and all that stuff, right? So you do serve clients in the US, and that's are your main clients. Is that correct? And then some in Australia too?
Majority are in APAC, so Australia, New Zealand, Asia, Asia Pacific. I've got some in the UK as well, in Singapore as well. I mean, the accounting standards are it's international now, so it's all very similar across the regions. Some slight differences, I think, in US GAAP as well. But yeah, it's very consistent nowadays anyway. So they've made it a lot easier in the last, so I'd say, 20 years.
Okay. That's good that, you know, things are getting more and more open in the world. And I know that I've seen using a lot of talent from India, from Philippines, South America, now in the United States, to do a lot of like the bookkeeping, and now there's AI too. And, you know, there's all this things that the world is becoming smaller and smaller. So it's good that you have, this understanding that applies really to internationally, let's say. So, I want to ask you about some actionable tips or advice for the audience, and doesn't necessarily has to be about just hedge accounting, right? But one thing that we've talked before is how well you have specialized on this, right? Like, that's a very big takeaway from this podcast. So can you give us some actionable tips or advice regarding your experience?
So I take a very structured approach to a lot of things. So, I mean, two examples I can think of is my studying. So, like, you know, very early on in my career, doing a lot of exams, and also then later on in my career, really specializing in the treasury and hedge accounting, you know, qualifications and study as well. But so, I mean, the techniques I used early on as well, I still use to current day, for example, when I've written my recent book. But yeah, looking at the exams, it was very much just, I had a lot to do. I wanted to do all my professional accounting exams very early on. So I actually did them at university at a business school in the UK in Brighton. So I went there and did my ACCA exams over there. So there was a lot of exams to do each year to if you wanted to pass them all first time and qualify as soon as you could, the fastest route, you had to pass them all and you had to do a lot of studying. So the way I would structure it seems, for me it seems quite simple, but it was very much just looking at the whole, if it was a 6 month period or semester, I would just be looking at the syllabus, and then I'd say, right, these are the amount of things I need to cover. If I want to cover everything, I need to do them on these days, these weeks, this month, and just prioritize on a day by day basis what part I needed to do and tick it off. And it didn't matter what else I had on really during the week. This was always the priority to get it done, which was quite hard to do when you're in your early 20s and your university and some of your other, you might be living with your housemates and they just want to go out and party or do whatever. You've got to be going, well, I've got to do this because you'll just fall behind. So I was very kind of structured and determined, single-minded, I'd call it, at that age, to make sure that I passed everything. So I think at the University of Brighton, I was awarded a Outstanding Achievement Award for passing six exams in the same week or same period, which hadn't been done before, and that approach has always held me in good stead. So like after that I did more exams on treasury management through the ACT and passed all those exams as well. So it was just a case of being very structured and just doing all the study that I needed to do. When it came to writing the books, I wrote a book. So I authored a book last year called Hedge Accounting Unlocked, and that's available on Amazon at the moment. It's doing well in the International Accounting Standards category. But that was about, saying, right, you need to do 30 to 40,000 words for this book. We want to write it in 2 months. So how many words a day do I need to do if I want to be writing, five days a week? And then just making sure I smashed those mini little goals every day, and looking at, every day, what's the one thing I need to do today that's gonna help me achieve getting a book published? And it was, right, well, you gotta write 1,000 words on this subject, do that. Yeah, and there's loads of other competing agendas each day, but that's the one thing that I needed to do. Because I find it sometimes very easy, and I sometimes catch myself doing it where you do you actually do everything but the one thing you need to do. So you've got it because you just don't want to do it, or there's something stopping some mental block, but you've got to be just really committed to it. And then you feel better after you've done it. I'd say it's just that time management and determination, single-mindedness, just to get things done.
And, I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, two big takeaways there, time management, and then the other part, which is kind of goes along with that, but is not only the manage your time, but also to have in mind that you, that's the one thing that you already said that you were going to do that day, right? Like those commitments that you do, and actually do them and know that you're going to feel better after you do them. It's just a thing that of us that we're always thinking like, oh yeah, I'm going to do it, but I need to create these perfect conditions or something. And, oh, I got to clean this before, or I got to do these things. There's certain things that sometimes, it's like, well, I got to take care of certain things, but we keep adding and not putting it off, right? So not putting it off.
What you touched on there just reminded me of something. So there's a couple of books that have helped as well. So Atomic Habits is one, which is very, very popular book, but that talks about, what you just said there about creating certain conditions to be able to produce what you need to produce. But that's one book that I value quite a lot, and I'm still reading most of it. But and then the one thing is just about, that approach that I just mentioned, where you just got to, each day you've got to look at what's the one thing that's going to achieve what you need to achieve. If I can do that, then I'm going in the right direction.
Exactly. It's a great advice to get people, like, that one thing, right? Like, just, you know, there's one thing that you have to do that you promise yourself you're going to do the day, then, you know, keep that promise to yourself, and that's how you win the day and you feel good about yourself, right? You have that win. So it's something that it helps us to be like, look, there's one thing that I have to finish, and then feeling accomplished is a great thing to then feel motivated to keep doing it, right? So it's a great book. That's why it's very popular. the atomic habits, you know, creating those habits. And then that one thing is more from, is that like your thing?
With the habits, there's one of the things on the, one of the strategies for habits is basically building on a good habit. So you do one good habit, and then because you've done that, you do the next one. So it's like a snowball effect as well. So I do one a daily one, really, on the way to work. So I'll get the ferry to work, which is a habit. So you just, something I prefer, I like getting the ferry in. It's nice. You see the Harbour Bridge, and you see the Opera House on the way into work. But a good habit that I built onto that is that on the way, I'll meditate for 10 minutes each day on that ferry journey. So when I get onto the ferry now, the habit is I naturally just go, right, it's time to meditate. And I'll put my earphones in, and I'll listen to whatever to calm down and focus for 10, 15 minutes. That's another habit that I'll apply.
That's great. That's great. I love that. You know, conditioning yourself, right, with that, and that definitely helps, and it's part of the Atomic Habits takeaways. So thanks for giving us that. I mean, you clearly demonstrated with the explanation of hedge accounting that you know your stuff. You know, you are very deep into this, and that's a great lesson here for the audience, that to specialize on something and by creating the habits, the time management, and really going super deep into something to become an expert, that then you can go to the market and it will be easy because you know this. So now the challenge, it's then change from, okay, I'm a great expert on this, and I'm a service provider or a technician, and then shifting more to like a business owner. And you know, if that's what you want to build, you just want to get like contracts or work, and you want to build out a business. And then next step that I typically advise is to, if you really want to get more impact, is the thought leadership part, right? Like, now it's, how can I disconnect more and more from the business and have time to go and impact people by doing speaking engagements, writing more books, and doing things that will do more one to many to impact as many people as possible.
Yeah, I mean, that's been my journey, because I mean, I recognized quite early that I wasn't, you know, like, people management and being more of a generalist wasn't really the area that I wanted to go down, because in my earlier days I was a finance manager and had a team and things like that. But I think I gravitated to more of the being more of a technical expert. I preferred that to being more sort of people manager and less technical. So I guess it just depends on the individual, what they want to do. Some people really like that idea of being a CFO for a large company, and they're the, you know, the person in charge of the whole of finance, and like that, would like the interaction with boards and things like that. But if you want to be more of an expert and you like the technical side, then yeah, my advice is to, you know, look at which category of accounting, there's so many of them, which one you want to be an expert in, and just spend, like, find a way to spend, you know, at least 10,000 hours working in that field, and then you will become an expert. It's just a question of time, and then you'll know far more than 99% of the population. in that category. So that's the area that I went down. And yeah, when you are an expert, you can obviously charge higher rates. There's that element to it. You can potentially start your own business, etc. So there's risks to that as well, but at least you're kind of master of your own destiny, as opposed to maybe, you know, if you're a CFO for a huge company, then you're still probably going to be an employee, and there's risks to that as well. Not everyone's guaranteed a job. Even if you are an employee, you can be made redundant, or you can lose your job in other ways. So I suppose if you're starting off and you're early on in your career, it's good to speak to people and speak to mentors and things and advisors and to help you really narrow down on what it is you actually enjoy. Where do you get the benefit? Where do you feel that you're going to provide the most value as well to customers and internal customers and things as well. So it's best to have more of a clear direction earlier on, and then because time goes very quickly, and then you can start planning how you're going to get to that future state, or how you're going to reach your potential.
Yeah, like that's a huge part of what I do is every time that I start an engagement, even before even deciding if I want to work or not with someone, I start asking about where you want to be, right? What are the goals? What are you willing to do? What you're not willing to do, and then reverse engineer from there. So everybody has their own preferences. Some people want to be more public facing. Some people want to be more, I want to just do the client work, right? Like, there's so many different ways that you can go about accounting. And that's what I really like. It's something that is very much needed. And it's the language of business, and there's so many different areas. So, I just discovered hedge accounting, and working with clients in this space for over a year now, I mean, almost 2 years, I think. So it's been a journey, and I keep learning more and more, and then there's new things. So it's very good to have you here to give us a taste of that. Now I have this powerful video and you also will have it too, that we can send it to other people to talk to you, to understand hedge accounting, and then, to be able to connect with you if needed. Such a specialized need. So thank you for that. I know that you want to connect. I mean, you said it multiple times, to CFOs. It seems to be the best connection for you, that are 100 million plus companies. And I know my audience, majority of them probably don't necessarily have access to one, but maybe they know somebody that knows somebody, things like that, because I have multiple fractional CFOs and accountants, tax professionals, things like that. So anything else to specify there, and how can people find you?
So yeah, I'm on LinkedIn. Tends to be the best way, easiest way to find me. So yeah, I'd say, businesses turning over that kind of turnover, 100 million plus is the sweet spot. And obviously the books on Amazon as well, Hedge Accounting Unlocked. So people can read that, or they can send that as a gift or something to their friends or whoever they know who's a CFO. But it's not just CFOs, group financial reporting managers, finance directors, financial controllers, all those people, treasury managers, all those people in those areas will know and will need to know, at least an overview to do with hedge accounting. And they might be struggling with it. So they might be trying to do it internally, and they're the ones that I really can help, because they're just by outsourcing it, they can free up so much of their time, and they don't have to worry that it potentially is getting done incorrectly. And they might need to restate their numbers if auditors do find that out. So no one really wants that to happen. It's a very bad look for the business and also people's personal brand. So it's best to get it looked at by an expert, and then you can really focus on the core finance functions that you're there to oversee and to be responsible for.
Yeah. That's correct. So thank you for being here. This was a very valuable conversation for if we can get it to the right people, and even if it's not people that would want to learn necessarily about hedge accounting, you are a great example of specialization, perseverance, and really saying no to a lot of things in your early 20s and not too much partying, all the so you can be able to be such an expert at your age now, instead of, you know, you basically accelerated your growth by doing these things, what normal average people do, let's say, right? So thank you for being here. I appreciate you giving this value to my audience, and I hope that this gets to the right people.
Thanks, James. No, thanks for having me on.
Thanks for listening to Moments with Foo with your host, Foo. Please leave your feedback and visit strategicadvisorboard.com to get the latest and greatest business advisement on the planet. Follow us on social media for updates, and we will see you on the next episode.